Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Thomas Gearing. How are you, Tom?
I'm very well, thank you.
Do you like being called Tom, or...?
I prefer being called Tom. There was a little bit of a mixture during The Apprentice. They had a lot of Thomas and a little bit of Tom, so but Tom is what I prefer.
Okay, and as you alluded to, you were the runner-up, second place person for The Apprentice,
that's
UK.
Correct, yeah.
UK, because there is an American Apprentice.
But I think the American one's only celebrities these days.
Is it?
Yeah, so I think this is the main deal now.
Oh, okay.
Well, I like to think so anyway.
You don't think you're a celebrity now?
No, not quite.
No, not quite. Okay, we're going to do two interviews with you. The first one, we're going to talk a wee bit about yourself and Colt Wines.
Okay.
And then the second one, we're going to look at your experiences in The Apprentice, and then also a wee bit more about your business case. We didn't really get a chance to see it in The Apprentice. It was sort of, you know, for something quite fundamental, it was pretty brushed over pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Who is Thomas Gearing, or Tom Gearing?
I'm a young guy. I finished university 3 years ago. I think when I was at university, I wasn't completely sure, you know, what I wanted to do. And kind of when I came out of university, I was kind of forced into a certain situation. And I kind of picked up on a lot of experiences I had when I was younger, which was involved with wine. My father used to run a wine business in the 90s, and I used to help out a lot, and got used to taking down to the Cote d'Or at the age of kind of 11, 12. So it was.
Did you like it? My kids get dragged all over wine regions as well.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh God, do we have to go to another wine region?
Yeah, but it's when you used to go back to school the next week and be like, oh, I was drinking wine on the last week, and everyone would be really jealous of you. So there was definitely some good sides of it. But it was a weird one for me, because, you know, I've always had that kind of interest and background in wine, and I've always kind of been exposed to, you know, going to wine auctions and buying and selling wine, and, you know, my dad building a wine cellar in our house, and, you know, those sort of things. And then when I was at university, I wasn't really sure which direction I was going to go into, but when I came out of university, I kind of reignited my interest in wine, and at the same time my interest in business. So that's really, you know, there's not much more to say. I'm pretty young, so I think there's probably a lot more development to go over the next few years, but that's where I am at the moment.
What'd you study at uni?
I studied history at the University of Nottingham.
Oh, yeah, so an artsy type of degree, which is probably pretty standard for someone in the wine trade.
Yeah, yeah.
My background's engineering, so I'm a wee bit different to most people. But cool. And how did you get involved in Colt Wines? Was it you that set it up, or your dad? And what's his name? Because it was always referred to as dad rather than...
Yeah, my dad, Phil, he's a director here at Colt Wines. It was actually myself and Oliver, my brother. We set up the company together. The company was incorporated in 2007, but up until when I left university, it was just kind of a shell of a company, really being used as a bit of a hobby, as it was, kind of part-time. When I left university, I tried to get a graduate job, but because of the economic situation, it was difficult to get a job. So I spoke with my brother, who was kind of not using the company. I said, look, I'm interested in setting up an office, getting some people into work, and really kind of take things forward. And that's how it all started, really. And then a year later, my dad, who'd always kind of been involved with wine in the past, said to me, you know, I'm interested in coming and work with you guys. Is that something you'd be interested in? And, you know, he came and joined us, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So he's...
It was kind of the opposite way around to,
to
how it normally happens.
Yeah, because I would have thought that it was maybe he started it and then you came and worked for him, but...
Yeah.
No, the other way around. What does he do? He's a director.
Yeah, he's a director now, yeah.
What does directors do, though, in this cult wine? Some directors just have lunch, and some shift boxes, so there's a range.
Yeah, you know, we're heavily involved in the business day-to-day. I'd probably say that his functions are probably more the... not boring side of things, but the kind of keeping an eye on the money on a day-to-day basis. We've got an accountant, obviously, but you know, finances, keeping an eye on that, and I'm probably more of the creative and looking at kind of strategy going forward, how we're going to develop the business, you know, stock supply. So yeah, we do everything between the two of us, and we make all the decisions together and build a business going forward like that.
And what is Colt Wines?
It's a fine wine company that specializes in investment. So, you know, we deal with private clients in the UK and overseas who want to build fine wine portfolios for investment purposes. That's, you know, where we started, and that's our foundation as a company. But we're really hoping and looking forward to the future now, and developing within the wine industry and kind of diversifying what we do within the wine industry.
So when you say helping people build portfolios, is that buying, like, for example, helping them buy on premier, or is it buying at auction, or is it a bit of both, or what is that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a bit of both. We do supply on from a lot of physical vintages. I mean, predominantly we deal in Bordeaux, you know, mostly Grand Cru Class A. We do some Burgundy as well, and we're starting getting into more Italian wines and a bit of Champagne as well at the same time. But, you know, just to, you know, nuts and bolts of it, someone says to us, you know, I'm interested in, you know, buying £10,000 worth of wine. I want investment grade wine that's going to last for 5 years and maybe show a good return. And we'll say, okay, well, we think you should put it into, you know, Chateau X and Y across these two vintages, and maybe, you know, some Enprimeur, and build a portfolio that kind of matches what they're looking to get out of it.
Yeah, okay. And it's been, the old LiveX index has been dropping for the last wee while. Is it still an interest? You know, are people still keen on that sort of thing? When markets are falling, it's normally a sign that people are getting out of the market as opposed to more people entering the market.
Yeah, the market's been falling. I think that's in the most part because the fine wine market has been integrally linked to the Chinese economy in the last 4 years. And the problem in China at the moment is because they're going through quantitative easing, and we've seen a lot of liquidity come out of the Chinese market. I mean, if you look at property market in China, for example, it's almost perfectly correlated to the fine wine market, which for me shows an indication of liquidity in China. And I think that's now affecting the fine wine market.
There's too much liquidity in China.
No, there's not enough liquidity. So during times of liquidity, you'll see prices obviously being more buoyant. So I think that's probably been one of the main reasons behind the fine wine prices dropping, you know, recently, as well as obviously the European sovereign debt crisis. You know, you're dealing with a product, and most of the wine that we deal with is French, that is, you know, integrally linked to the euro. So if you're going to have a downturn in the euro, and a lot of obviously, you know, stakeholders in the wine market are European based, that's also going to have an impact. And in general, I think there has been a loss of investor confidence in all types of markets. But I also think, to the other side of the coin, with the wine market and wine prices, there have been periods in the past where, you know, prices have dropped over a 6 month or 12 month or 18 month period. We've seen it in 2008 following the Lehman Brothers crash. We're seeing it now since kind of mid-July 2011. We've also seen it kind of the end of the 90s following the Singapore stock market crash. I don't see it as a massive hindrance, because if you are going to be buying fine wine and you're seeing it as a tool for capital appreciation, you should be buying it because you're going to hold on to it for 5 to 10 years. You're not seeing it as an income producing product, because you can't do that. But over that sort of viewpoint, you know, if you look at any 5 year period, even from the worst times, fine wine's still showing appreciation. So although there has been some short term volatility and downturn, I still think the long term factors and underlying factors for investing wine are still looking good. So, you know, that's my view on the market. It's slightly biased, I admit, but we try and be as honest as possible.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And where do you source your clients? Do they just come to you, or, you know, from shows like this perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, shows like this are helping a little bit more. But I suppose what the reason we started in the first place is because it was good timing on our behalf, because when the company really started getting going was during a period where prices were going up. A lot of investors were looking at it. People who weren't necessarily wine enthusiasts were looking at it as a viable asset class. So we were looking at it and we're going, well, if you invest in stocks and shares, or you invest in, you know, traditional investment classes, you're used to a certain type of service. In the wine market, there isn't that service for people who don't know what they're talking about, or they don't know about wine. So we saw the opportunity to bridge the gap from, you know, a typical sort of wine merchant and a typical kind of investment broking service you'd have in a different market. So we just try to provide that for everyday investors. So for those reasons, in the early days, a lot of the people we were targeting and customers we were taking on board were, you know, everyday investors, people who are used to investing in stocks and shares and wanted to diversify away from that. And that's today pretty much how we market as well. You know, we market with financial publications, and we really try and target those sort of people.
Okay, that's quite expensive. You know, publication targeting through publications and print media is quite an for our business, we've found it too expensive for us. But obviously your margins might be a bit bigger than
I mean, print media is definitely you know, a high return on investment. But I mean, we look at kind of direct marketing opportunities. And the other thing that we try and do, and we have done over the last couple of years, is we try and differentiate ourselves from other people within this marketplace to show that, you know, we are producing unique material, our research material is good, we're doing, you know, quantitative and qualitative analysis of all the different wine stocks that people get involved with, and trying to provide a service that's really good for them. And to be honest with you, one of the best sources of customers has been, you know, people talking to their friends and telling people about it. You know, word of mouth has been excellent for us. And I think if you do get 20 people on board in the first, you know, days of the company, and they do well and they're happy with the service, they're going to tell 5 or 10 of their friends, and then, you know, you see a reciprocal nature coming from that service. So that's what we've really tried to focus on, a good customer service, a good package, and kind of understanding what people want when they're investing in wine.
And what you talked about analysis, do you so it's not just like a brokerage firm, you're actually doing some analysis on stocks and levels and all that sort of stuff, is it?
Yeah, I mean, we're not a brokerage firm because we actually take stock positions before we offer it out to clients. The reason we do that is
so you buy stock and then you're basically, so you're more like a trader almost.
Yeah, almost. And the reason we do that is because if you are just purely broking, then you know, you might be buying, you know, on one day you might be going, okay, we need to get one or two cases of this and one or two cases of that. Whereas if we can take a long term position in something, not only is it showing our clients that we're, you know, putting ourselves as part of the process as well. By showing, look, we're confident we're taking a position in this stock, but it also allows us to buy advantageous prices, which we can then pass on to our clients, so then they're getting in at a better price. And if you're buying it for investment, you know, it's better to be getting in at a sharp market price as well.
Okay, and so do you buy on Premier direct from the chateaus, or do you buy it through the likes of John Avery's and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, in the last two to three years, we've really established some good supply network within the Bordeaux Negocion, the Place de Bordeaux. We're now getting allocations not only of, you know, second to fifth growth, but we're also getting allocations each year of first growth, which is, you know, something that I'm really proud of, because coming into this market as someone who's obviously quite young and without a market reputation, actually going out there and meeting the, you know, negociants and meeting the chateau owners and the winemakers and trying to get across what, you know, we're doing here and try and build up a strong relationship was very important to us. So I'm really glad about the progress we've made on that part, and that means that we can again, you know, provide that to our clients.
Who do you think are your peer groups in terms of, you know, your competitors?
Well, I mean, obviously you've got the kind of headline UK merchants, people like Far Vintners, Bordeaux Index, Berry Brothers. You know, these guys are massive in the fine wine business, and you know, they do provide investment services. They sell the same wine that we do. So I mean, they're always going to be our biggest competitors, but not someone we would directly compete with. I think we probably see ourselves on the same page as the other wine investment companies, people like Albany Portfolio Management, Premier Cru Wine Investment, Aston Lovell, those sort of companies who've got a similar sort of size, similar sort of trading history.
To be honest, I don't really deal much in the fine wine market. Yeah. I drink deal with wines I drink.
Yeah, no, that's pretty understandable.
But it is always interesting. I always find the fine wine market to be quite pretentious. Quite often, and we laugh, but you don't come across as pretentious. You've got almost like a South London accent, and not a Kingston accent. You're from Kingston, though, aren't you?
I was originally born in Southfield in Southwest London, but yeah, I've lived in Kingston for the last kind of 10 years.
How do you find it though? Because do you find that sort of the negotiants and all that, they're all, you know, very nicely suited and booted and all that sort of stuff, which is great, so. You know.
I think you are completely correct, and there's still certain doors that we've been banging on for 3 years that we've had absolutely nothing back from. But I think the actual supply relationships we've actually built up have been with people who are kind of similarly minded to ourselves, you know, people who aren't so pretentious about the wine market, you know, completely understand the different aspects of, you know, what the fine wine market and especially what the Bordeaux market is today. And you know, we haven't got, you know, 50 or 100 negotiants we deal with, it's only a small number, but I think we've appealed to a certain type of negotiant, and I think they are available out there. So I think we've kind of chosen the right sort of people to be involved with.
Okay, and is your client base mainly in London or the UK or world, or where do you see your client base?
70% is in the UK, and the rest is overseas. We've got clients in 27 different countries at the moment, and we've just seen a real proliferation in international investors and people internationally, you know, showing an interest in fine wines, not just from the investment side of things, but, you know, building, you know, collections for drinking. And that's something we've moved more and more in to, you know, building collections for people to actually drink one day as well, which is something that I'd like to do more and more of in the future. And proliferation, you know, as you can expect, you know, we've got a lot of clients based in kind of Hong Kong, Singapore, Thailand. We've just taken on our first couple of clients from India as well, which is showing a kind of, you know, a market upturn in interest. We've also got clients in South America. So you really, you know, it's really far spread across the globe.
What market segment gives you the most excitement?
Internationally?
Or domestically?
Well, I think the Far Eastern market for people who are involved in obviously trading wines is the most exciting because it's so much untapped potential there. So yeah, I'd probably say that region is something that I'd really look to explore more.
When you say trading, do you mean like buying and selling as a derivative of wines, like an indexes, or in the physical?
Yeah, in the physical, I think for everyone, I think if you look at winemakers, if you look at all the kind of producers there are, you know, not just in France, but in America now, and a lot of the Australian producers, you know, they are trying to market their products into China and the Far East because there's a huge untapped market there. And I think, you know, it's a very immature market at the moment, you know, kind of taste and knowledge is very basic, but that's only going to improve in the future. And I don't think it's something that's, you know, a short-term thing. I think that that's going to continue for a while. And I think there's great opportunities, not only for people like ourselves who, you know, trading wines for investment purposes. I think there's opportunities for independent winemakers and, you know, a lot of producers to, you know, get their wines into that area of the market and, you know, build a strong kind of base there.
I was in Hong Kong last year, yeah. I can't remember. And you said the Asian taste in that area, but basically, I sort of disagree a wee bit with that. I think there is a group that are very deep. You know, they've got massive understanding, but it's not a wide market, if you know what I mean.
But I would see is there's actually quite a big of a divergence between Hong Kong and mainland China. I think that in Hong Kong there's no doubt that, you know, I mean, Hong Kong have been involved in the wine market for 15 years. It's not something that happened overnight when they reduced import duties. You know, it was quite an established market anyway. You know, if it wasn't an established wine market where there was interest, there'd have been no reason for the authorities to reduce the import duties. So I think you are right, you know, people in Hong Kong out of the Asian region in the world, they are the pinnacle in terms of knowledge and, you know, they know what they're talking about. But I think mainland China, there's still a lot of development going on. You know, one of the girls who works here, she is from mainland China, and, you know, she tells us all the time, you know, people, you know, are still learning about different wines in different regions and getting to understand what wines suit their palate rather than just choosing stuff for social reasons.
Okay, I didn't pull your company documents. I should have pulled your company documents beforehand, so then I'd know. But what's your turnover? Because I heard it was a couple of million at some points, but I wasn't quite sure what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, last year when our financial year ends in September, so we're nearly end of the second one. But last year it was for 2011 was 3.6 million, and then this year I think we're going to be up on that.
That's not too bad going for. Well, how many years? Quite a few years. Couple of years of hardcore.
Yeah. So 3 years of full-on trading.
Yeah. Okay. It's not too bad. It's going quite well.
Yeah.
And what's the long-term plan?
As I was saying at the beginning, kind of diversifying within the sets we're in. I mean, the foundation of what we do is wine investment, and, you know, that's, you know, we're not going to forget about that. That is our bread and butter. But, you know, I've got a passion for wine, not just obviously the investment side of things. My father as well, having been involved with wine for a long time, and, you know, also got a lot of interest in it. We're now looking at opportunities we can, you know, further expand our services within the wine market. You know, if that means moving into more retail wines, providing a home delivery service for our customers, providing an online platform for people to use, you know, also holding more events, more tasting events, you know, getting people actively involved with drinking the wine, as well as obviously buying it for investment. And I think that would be a perfect harmony, because I don't want to just be running a company that people buy into a stock that they never see or touch and sell it before they ever hear anything more about it. I want people to actually be involved with it as well and understand what they are buying into. And I think that that would be my kind of, you know, main aim over the next couple of years, and see what opportunities there are for us to kind of grow.
One of the big problems with fine wine investing is provenance.
Yeah.
But more importantly, once you've taken delivery, if you've bought on premier and you've taken delivery, so you've got really good confidence that is the wine that you've bought. Well, hopefully it's got confidence it's the wine you bought. Once it starts moving into warehouses and starts getting shifted around time and time again, and I've spoken to auction houses about this, the more a wine is traded, the more removed it comes from the initial purchase, so therefore the greater the risk that the provenance isn't quite right. So how do people manage that, or how do you encourage people to manage that?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely something, and it's one of the probably something that we emphasize a lot in terms of where we buy stock from. We only work with certain suppliers that we know we've got a good track record with. We know the stock's where it's coming from, the good condition. I mean, a lot of the big bonded warehouses here in the UK, they provide a very good service when it comes to photographing stock, when it comes to actually providing a track record for where it's been held for the last 5 or 6 years. You know, a lot of these bonded warehouses in the UK are, you know, kept at optimum, you know, temperature control conditions. And I think if you're buying in bonds, you know, buying fine wine stock from anywhere in the world, I think there is a premier put on stock that's held in London over a lot of other places worldwide. So my kind of recommendation to people is make sure that you're working with someone that you trust and someone that's got a good track record. Make sure that you get condition reports of the wines. Make sure you get a track record. Where has it been? Where has it been held for the last few years? And make sure you've got it stored in somewhere that, again, you trust. So make sure it's one of the big UK bonded warehouses. Make sure it's in temperature controlled conditions. And, you know, if you are personally putting the collection together, make sure that you've got your own account. You're managing that process. And I think if you put those kind of processes into action, then you should be fine. The only warning, you know, I would have is, you know, if you are buying particularly old vintages, you know, anything pre probably say 2000, you know, they probably need more checking on them. You know, there's been a lot of problems with, you know, counterfeit bottles. And it does seem to me that a lot of the counterfeit bottles, or where there are fake bottles in circulation, they are the more mature vintages. You know, you're looking at kind of 1982 Petrus, you know, 61 vintages, also large format bottles. That's where, for me, you've got to be most cautious. But I think if you're dealing with a lot of the younger vintages, you know, post 2000, and you're dealing with a reputable merchant, then you should be okay.
And who are the top, from your point of view, who are the top warehousing or storage solutions?
Well, I mean, we use London City Bond here in the UK. I mean, you've got Octavian as well, which provide a fantastic service. You've got EHD as well, which is just in Weybridge. I know a number of the merchants as well provide their own storage services. So Berry Brothers provide their own. Seckford's have their own storage service. So there are a few out there, but they're the main ones that I'd recommend using.
Okay, excellent. All right then, Tom, I think we'll wrap it up there. Cheers very much.
No worries. Cheers.
Cheers, bud.